Good afternoon. I would like to call the Senate Judiciary Committee to order. Today is Monday, February 22nd. Let the time reflect. It's 1:32 p.m. Today we have present Vice Chairman Senator Schauer, Senator Hughes, Senator Myers, and Senator Keel, and of course myself, Chairwoman Reinbold. I'd like to remind people to silence your cell phones if you have them on, just to reduce interference and interruptions. I want to thank Nancy. Thank you guys so much. And it's Kelsey today. So thanks for joining us. And then Aaron, again, thanks for stepping up. My committee aide is on a family emergency, so Aaron has just been doing a fabulous job. And thanks for all the staffers, including Senator Schauer, Senator Hughes' office, the people that have been stepping up to offer us a little bit of assistance. We really appreciate it. I also want to apologize that Judiciary was canceled on Friday. I will tell you, I did not cancel it, okay? But it was canceled just like almost everything else, from floor session to subcommittees. Just about everything was canceled, and I don't even know why. So bottom line is it was, and I just want to apologize to people. That was unexpected change. But I will tell you, I'm super excited to be here. Sometimes you don't know what you have till it's gone. Well, I'll tell you, I do know what I have. And I do have a wonderful Judiciary Committee. I love chairing this committee. It's hard. It's technical. There's going to be debates and sometimes feisty debates. But I'll tell you this, it's a privilege and an honor to sit here. And it's, I think we have a great committee, and I'm really excited. We have one thing today on continuation. We've been working really hard for, gosh, 4 or 5 weeks on this bill, and what we have today is Senate Bill 14 amendments. And with that, Mr. Vice Chairman, would you like to take the hot seat?
I Madam Chair, for the record, Senator Schauer, sponsor Bill Senate Bill 14. Thank you for allowing me the chance to speak today on this, on both the bill and the amendment. And for the committee, if it's acceptable, what I would like to do is go through a couple documents and some information, and then I'm going to have Scott Ogan, he's my senior policy advisor, to talk about Amendment 4, which we worked with Senator Hughes' office on as a requested change. And as I think the committee and others that are watching this have noted, we've made significant changes to the bill just because we like to have the discussion, and we were willing to listen and entertain those changes. We made a number of them. Hopefully the bill will be more acceptable to both the court system, which I know opposes this. Generally, it's their empire, and I understand that. We've had a pretty robust debate here on it. But I want to point out some things. So if it's all right with Madam Chair, I'd like to go ahead and provide that testimony.
Please, Mr. Vice Chairman. Oh, Senator Hughes?
Should he move the amendment? Is it specific to the amendment?
We're not to the amendment yet.
Okay.
Senator Hughes, through the chair, I'd just like to provide some supporting documentation, and then we'll get into the amendment itself and questions and whatever else the committee has, if that's okay. And may I ask for permission to read a few different documents as we go? Okay. So first of all, the committee will find before itself a couple pieces of information that we thought might make more sense in a graphic form as opposed to trying to read these bills and make this in your head, put a picture into your head. So you can see on number one, that is what we currently do, where it says attorney pool, you go down judicial council screens, governor selects, and then they're on the bench. And we point out the names that are off to the side. Screen names referred to the governor for final selection from the judicial council. But the governor has only one choice, so he has to pick from that, and that's the only choice available to him in the current system. If you go to slide number two, and to answer the question, I know through the chair to Senator Hughes, we're not discussing the amendment yet. I just want to show that this documentation is there that we can go through. That will highlight what would happen once Amendment 4 passes, if Amendment 4 was to pass, and the bill would be in then its current form. This is how the process would work, and so we can talk to that later. For reference, because we've been discussing it, we have discussed a little bit about what some other states do. We had a testifier last week talk about that from California specifically, who's been there for many decades in that system. But I thought it also important that the selection of federal judges, so I'll just very briefly on that because it's been talked about what is essentially the Missouri plan or the merit plan I'm going to read here in a moment. But if you look at this, essentially what happens is recommendations are made to the president, and he either declines them or accepts them. If he accepts them, he moves them on. And the Senate Judiciary Committee will interview that candidate, and if they decide they don't like him or her, then they'll just simply be returned. The president could renominate or just let them go. If they like that particular nominee, they will go to the Senate for confirmation. The Senate will vote on it. If not, they're off to the side and they go back and won't become a judge. If they confirm that that candidate becomes a federal judge. Point being is that the Congress gets involved in the decision as the people's representative. It's not just the president that makes those nominations. On to some more information.
Can I interrupt you just for
yes, Madam Chair, please.
I wanted to ask, do you know if these are up on BASIS yet? Because we just got these documents.
We just did. Just we like just finished them, Madam Chair. So they were intended to be, but I don't.
Okay, so I just want anybody who's listening online, these will be uploaded immediately through Terrence and Aaron right afterwards because I actually just got these. So these are excellent, though. Excellent. So really want to make sure that these are uploaded because they're
Madam Chair,
good.
We absolutely will do that. We just haven't got that far. We literally pull these hot off the press, as the saying goes, right before that because we thought this might help committee members and the public take a look at what we currently do and what will potentially happen if the bill was to pass. So that it's something easier to follow.
And,
thank you.
And Mr. Vice Chairman, pictures are worth a thousand words. And this basically, I mean, it really streamlines and it really, all these thousand words this puts into one picture. So I just want to say thank you. This is extremely helpful. And I can't wait to get these up on BASIS.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just for some other reference points for the committee, these are not provided to you because these are just my notes. These are things I passed to myself. So I'm just reading from some of this. Things you can find all kinds of stuff online, of course. Judicial selection in California. California uses two different systems for selection of state court judges. The state's appellate judges are chosen by gubernatorial appointment, followed by commission confirmation. They're commissioned there on judicial, and it's a different name than ours, selection actually just it gets the up or down vote. And their trial judges are elected by popular nonpartisan vote. So that's one that's different than us in some ways. There's this merit system we'll talk about here in a moment. We have judicial selection in Florida. I just picked a couple from across the country. State court judges in Florida are selected through one of two methods, depending on the level of the court. Judges of the appellate courts undergo a process of assisted appointment, or what's called the merit system or the Missouri plan, more commonly referred to, while judges on the trial courts participate in nonpartisan elections. Oregon, back to the West Coast. Selection of state court judges in Oregon occurs exclusively through nonpartisan elections. And then I had the federal one in here. And then the final one before we get into the actual amendment, a little more detailed for the committee. But we have what's called the assistant appointment method of judicial selection, sometimes referred to as merit selection or the Missouri plan. Now, without getting into lots of data, because people that want to read into this can get into the weeds, and I have, you can look at the number of states that have some type of either all elections or appointments or some blended system. So as an example, for partisan elections, just to give an example, there are six states that use that: Alabama, Illinois, Louisiana, North Carolina, Pennsylvania, Texas. And I'm not going to read them all, just giving you an idea. They have nonpartisan election, and they kind of don't really differentiate between partisan and nonpartisan elections. That's just how the states, they have elections for their judges. You have five states that have gubernatorial or legislative appointments: California, New Jersey, Tennessee, South Carolina, Virginia. And then we have assisted. There's 15 states that have assistant appointment, which is the system we're talking about, this merit-based one, and then a combination of assisted and appointment and other methods. So there's your total in states. But it's another chart that has even more of this with history behind it going through it, but it's rather interesting. There's a Shepherd study, and I want to point this out because this is data-driven reports, because I had mentioned this before about the makeup of the Alaska Bar Association, where they talk about the politics, and this building is political, but the courts stay absolutely above the fray. That's the contention that the courts make, and I've spoken to that many times. But in this study, it says the empirical relationship between contributions and justices' voting interests exists only in partisan, nonpartisan systems. There is no statistically significant relationship between money and voting in retention election systems. We use a retention election system, not an election system. Point is, the politics, according to the studies, would show that there's no relationship between how a judge might vote and how money might be spent for a retention election. And because, as I have pointed out, that when you look at the Alaska Bar Association, it's about two-thirds of those that are affiliated with a political party that are Democrat, one-third Republican, this I found also to be interesting. There is a stronger relationship between contributions and justices voting amongst justices affiliated with the Democratic Party than among justices affiliated with the Republican Party. So the point is that we still have politics in these systems, regardless of whether it's a elected system or a non-elected merit-based system. Some of the other points I think you might find interesting, for those that are arguing against this merit-based process, one of the arguments against it, the method is still a political process, which we pointed out. Board members are chosen by Bar Association members, and also those that are against this type of merit-based system, voters should be allowed to have a more direct voice in determining which judges will serve in the courts, which we've kind of pointed out that we don't. We have pointed out. And most judicial nominating commissions do not open meetings to the public. We also asked that question when we had them in before. And if you may remember, Madam Chair, it was kind of hard to get an answer. And it took, I think, three or four iterations of asking the question to finally get to the point that, well, it's not all open to the public. And one of the arguments, again, for changing this a little bit is to have more transparency in the system as well. So I would like to read a couple quotes from some professors around the country. It is hard to believe that lawyers who select judges in merit systems care less about the decisional propensities of judicial candidates than do voters or elected officials. Another one. As the bar is an elite segment of society, states that give lawyers more power than their fellow citizens are rightly described as elitist. Democratic principles are violated, however, when members of the commission are selected by a minority of the persons, i.e. lawyers in their area. This, of course, is the core of the Missouri plan, the merit-based system. Allowing the bar to select some of the commission and then declining to offset that bar power with confirmation by the Senate or other popular elected body. And it is this core that deprives the Missouri plan of democratic legitimacy. Final one. Well, two more. As the term implies, merit selection is thought by its supporters to result in more qualified and otherwise better judges than electoral selection. There's just one hitch to this. There is virtually no empirical support for this claim. There is a large body of social science research on state Supreme Courts, and it shows that there is no real observable difference between the judges chosen in merit selection states and those chosen in other states. Judges from state A tend to look and act almost the same as judges from states B through Z, regardless of how they are selected or retained. In other words, a given state's choice between merit selection and partisan election does not seem to have any discernible effect on the kind of people chosen for the bench or their performance on it. And then a Louisiana Supreme Court judge had this to say when his last State of the State address. His experience has been that the electorate for the most part has made wise and deliberate choices of those who are elected to serve in state judiciary. He was also concerned that replacing an elective system with a selective or appointive-only system takes away the choice from the people and places it in the hands of a few. It does not in any way remove the politics from the process, as some have argued. That was Justice Caliguero. Just a couple more points, if I may, Madam Chair, because I think this all is a part of the argument of why we're saying we think we could do this a little different and better, and to point out that other states are doing this. It's not just us, and as opposed to the Alaska Daily News pointing into a news title that says I'm going to upend how we, you know, elect Alaska judges, that wasn't the intent here. The intent was to assert the legislative's constitutional authority to fill the lower courts. I'll say it again. We're not changing how we select Supreme Court or Superior Court judges. That's in the Constitution. We're not touching it. This is the legislature asserting its given constitutional authority to appoint the lower courts. From the Fitzpatrick study, Professor Brian Fitzpatrick of Vanderbilt University claimed that the Missouri plan has resulted in the nomination of more left-leaning judges. Interesting. Of note, 54 nominees in Missouri since 1995 who made any campaign contributions, 87% gave more to Democrats than Republicans, and only 13% gave more to Republicans than Democrats. Over the same time period, Democratic candidates in Missouri only received roughly 50% of the general election votes in state and federal houses. And in that turnover and retention elections, retention elections are intended to hold judges accountable for their performance on the bench, but they very rarely result in judges being removed from office. In many states, judges up for retention are evaluated by the local bar association and recommended to the public as qualified or not qualified, but a poor recommendation does not necessarily result in a judge's removal. Last point I will read, Madam Chair, and I'll be done with this. A 1998 study by Mr. Easterling and a Mr. Sampson said that judicial retention evaluation programs in four states, and I'm going to specifically point out Alaska, found that in Alaska, only 58% of voters, respectively, said that they were aware of available judicial performance evaluations. I bring all these things up, Madam Chair, because there's quite a few points we've discussed, and this is in response to many of the questions that have been asked, both from the courts and the public. And I wanted to bring those out to say that this is a much larger debate, and this is not this just about Alaska, and that's where much of this comes from. Many other states are doing it differently than we are doing it. Some of them are much more blue. Some of them are more red. We're somewhere maybe almost in the middle of that now. And so as you can see with some of the documentation and empirical data and studies and professors of law from around the nation, including some testimony we've had here, those work. Politics are still in the system, whether they say they are or not. We actually have this other systems that work just fine. As the testifier pointed out last week, every one that the governor put through was confirmed. And you can look at the politics of it. And when they try to say there's no politics, well, the data says there are. So the arguments, to me, fall kind of flat on what the courts are saying as far as the why and the Missouri plan. So that being said, Madam Chair, I will stop there. If there are questions we wish to discuss, and then we'd be happy to get into the actual amendment itself. Thank you.
So as sponsor of the bill and also Vice Chairman, first of all, I want to say that what you just presented has brought in about a month worth of work that we've done in this committee, and it was excellent. So it's definitely brought clarity to me, and so I really want to say thank you for that information. Before I take a question, what I would like to ask you, because you talk fast, I guess I talk fast. Nancy is amazing, but if you could help provide the documentation that you spoke from and all those quotes, it would not only help us for our committee, but I'm sure it would help Records, who's doing an incredible job for us. So I'd just like to say that, and thank you very much. I actually love to reread that and, you know, be able to comprehend that again, because it was actually excellent. So anyway, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And actually, that was going to be my primary request, was for the sources of the unsourced quotes and the studies, so that we can take a look at and evaluate those for what they may or may not be.
Absolutely.
That would be very helpful. I guess there is a theoretical question, though, in that the sponsor gave a presentation talking about how the results from different ways of picking judges don't seem to be any worse any place than they are any better any place. So if they're just as good one way as the other way, I mean, I appreciate your statement when you first introduced the bill in its first hearing that the goal is to get to a constitutional amendment and change all our judges, and this is a half step. But if one system is as good as another, why change?
Mr. Vice Chairman.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. Good question. I think perhaps you asked a theoretical question. I'll give you a theoretical answer. So I think a little bit of what you're saying there is taking out of context my point, because what I'm trying to illuminate for the committee is that other states do it differently. But one of the arguments we've heard, especially from the courts and those that are friends with the court, have said that if we change it, it can't possibly work and it's going to be worse and we're going to have politics in the process. And the information that I have shows otherwise than that, number one. Number two, and where I think perhaps we differ a little bit on how you took that away, and if I could have made it more clear, I apologize if my intent was not clear, is that from the very beginning, our contention has been that allowing a trade organization to essentially have the ability to provide the nominees with no other cross-checks other than the governor gets to pick from them is not the best or most transparent way to do business. So I may have misrepresented that where you took it away differently than that, but let me be clear. For the record, I do not believe that a system as we currently have that allows the Judicial Council to screen, and the Judicial Council members are appointed by the Alaska Bar Association, that are not elected, they're unaccountable to the people, they have no up or down vote by the legislature. I do not think that what we are currently doing is the best way to do business. I think we can do better. That's what this bill attempts to do. I think we should allow to have some accountability to the people that we all represent, which the next page of this slide would actually do, in my opinion. So I don't think we're doing it as good as we could be, and I think we can do it better. So, and I think the data can support that. But again, by pointing out what other states do is only to say that there are other ways of doing business. And the contention has been consistently from some that have been testifying along this process of saying, well, it just can't work. And that's clearly not true, because it does. And so, again, for the record, I want to say I'm not saying that that we can't do it better. I believe we can, which is why we're doing this. If I thought it was great and I had no issue with it, I wouldn't file a bill. So the point of filing the bill, to be clear, is to try to find a method that is, one, a bit more transparent, two, that gives some voice of the people we represent in the process, and three, does not allow a trade organization and essentially lawyers, of which there are some fantastic ones, I've used them, to essentially have control of one-third of the governmental structure, and they are not held accountable through the process until a retention vote. And as I have pointed out with this, and I'll be happy to give you the source information because it's here, they are almost never held accountable. And as one of our presenters said last week, we may even have a constitutional issue potentially with how taxpayer money is used when you are having that body that is unelected provide information to the voter. So there's a host of issues, Senator Keel, I think that we can do better. And I suggest that through the course of this bill and allowing that transparency and the people to have a say in the process is a good thing, not a step in the wrong direction, and admittedly a small step in the right direction. And it really isn't that big of a change when you consider nationally how other things are done, including the federal system. So thank you, Senator Keel, for the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just
okay, go ahead.
Yeah, I appreciate that. So I guess I had missed the testimony from any of the experts that nothing else could possibly work. I had heard a testimony that the difference between a smidgen of politics and a lot of politics is of concern. So you referenced in the last comment there that folks don't seem to retain or don't seem to non-retain judges very, very often. But you also, in your initial presentation today, bemoaned the fact that Alaskans don't seem to know that the Judicial Council's evaluations are available. And I guess I would I see a tension there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Vice Chairman, would you like to respond?
Through the Chair, Senator Keel, I'm not sure if there was a question there for me to answer, if that was more of a comment.
Comment.
Okay. I don't know what to say to that.
Okay, so you don't want to comment. Okay, so with that, if you are finished and we're done with questions, I'm going to ask you to come up and we can work on amendments if you're ready. And I forgot to mention that Scott Ogan is on the line as a lifeline for you. Obviously, you...
Yes, Madam Chair, and he's actually going to take us through the amendment.
Oh, perfect.
And then we can, of course, ask questions as you wish, but okay. I can take the chair again and have him run us through.
Excellent, because I want to kind of get everybody, as you're coming back up, I'm going to get the committee caught up from, and you guys, please correct me if I'm wrong, okay? My recollection is that we tabled amendment number one, not tabled, we moved it to the bottom of the stack. So it's still in play, but it's in the bottom of the stack. We passed amendment number two. I'll tell you, I asked for a committee substitute because that was such a big amendment, but I alleged legal said no because what I was trying to do is go over the fiscal notes today. So the bottom line is with number three was withdrawn, and so we're on number four right now, and I just want to give everybody a heads up that I could not get a committee substitute with fiscal notes ready today, so we're going to have to do that on Wednesday. Okay, but with that, Mr. Chairman, or Mr. Vice Chairman, I'm sorry. would you mind moving amendment number four, please?
Madam Chair, I move amendment number four.
And Mr. Vice Chairman, I object for purposes of discussion.
Madam Chair, I'd like, if I could, to have my senior policy advisor, Scott Dogan, on the line to go ahead and introduce himself and walk us through amendment number four.
Excellent. Mr. Ogan, name, you know the routine, name, affiliation, and please proceed as you're ready.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Scott Ogan. I'm the senior policy advisor to Senator Mike Schauer. And this amendment appears very complicated. And the genesis of it was actually from Senator Hughes, who wanted to see the governor's names, instead of going directly to the legislature, she would wanted the governor's names to be screened, the governor's candidates to be screened by the Judicial Council through their normal process. And so we tried to come up with a hybrid of that, still allowing the Judicial Council to submit up to four names, and allowing the governor to submit two names. All six candidates would be vetted through the same process that's established in the Judicial Council. Those six names would be submitted to the governor. The governor would select one name from that, or possibly select no names. He might decide after the screening, and I think this was the intent of Senator Hughes's concerns, the screening might turn something up that changes the governor's mind and go, I don't think I want to be held accountable. That particular attorney has XYZ in his background that wasn't aware of. So the governor could reject even his own nominees, and he could reject the nominees that the Judicial Council puts forward. Or he could accept one, and if so, it goes to the legislature, and the legislature confirms. If they confirm, they go to the bench. If they don't confirm, they go back into the lawyer pool. And that pretty much sums it all up. If anybody has any questions, I'd be happy to answer them. The amendment is complicated. It looks confusing, and we decided to try to digest it down to actually explain what the outcome of the amendment is under all the particular language. I could attempt to go through the language, but I think it's better just to go over what the intent of the amendment is and make sure that everybody understands that. If anybody has any questions.
Mr. Ogun, I'm going to let Senator Hughes, since she worked with you, make a few comments, and then if anyone would like you to go through the language, I'm just going to have you have them raise their hand and ask, but I'm good for now. Senator Hughes?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Scott, for working with me, and thank you to the sponsor for listening to my concerns. I think the graphic and for the public, once that's posted on BASIS, it does an excellent job. As the chair had mentioned earlier, the graphics are really helpful. My goal and why I wanted to work with the sponsor on this is I wanted to make sure that we could deter or eliminate cronyism with a governor appointing a good old buddy where maybe he doesn't really know all the ins and outs. And by the vetting by the Judicial Council, we would know how well qualified they are. We would hope to take partisanship out of the selection as much as possible. And then also, because of the vetting that would take place, the public would learn about these individuals as well, and there'd be information available. So I think it improves the concept of the governor being able to add a couple people to the list. And I think, too, what you mentioned, that the governor might, in the end, realize that the people, the names he put forward, maybe are not who he or she might wish to appoint.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. A couple of questions, and the first may be on Senator Hughes's last point. It's sort of an oddity to me, the notion that a governor might put people forward for judgeships without screening them internally. I hearken back to when I worked on the third floor, and there was someone who did boards and commissions who banned the phrases "nice guy" and "really nice person," because they so often would come in and, oh, you need to put this person in this job or that exempt job. He's a nice guy, or he's a great guy, or you got to put this person on that board. She's a really great person. To which, any talented staff person would say, and their qualifications, right? So the idea that a governor would put someone forward for a judgeship without screening them is an odd one to me. Can you sort of help me understand how we see that feeding into the process?
Senator Hughes?
Thank you for that, Senator Keel. I think what we'll get is we'll be comparing apples to apples rather than apples to oranges, because the Judicial Council has a certain process they go through, and that allows that person to go through the same process. It also makes the information public. And, yes, I would hope that every governor would do the vetting, but they probably would not do the identical process to what the Judicial Council does, so I think that would be helpful. And it could be that the Judicial Council might turn something up. Whoever vets anyone for anything, sometimes things are missed, and I'd say double vetting is better than single vetting.
So
And yeah, just one second. In regards to, I read the rules many years ago, but the bottom line is we're supposed to relax a little bit, especially during the amendment process, and so I don't mind a little bit of bantering and even sometimes spirited or if I see debate. So with that, Senator Keel, please.
Thank you. So I appreciate that. So as I understand the amendment language, the Judicial Council could come out of that second vetting and say, Governor, your number one campaign contributor you sent us here also has some nasty ethics and criminal background, and we don't think they're qualified to be a judge. Do I understand the amendment correctly? The governor could still appoint them?
That is correct.
I'm sorry. Did you want some back and forth?
Senator Hughes, I'm going to be a little more relaxed because this is a time where we're supposed to be having some.
Yes, indeed, Senator Keel. The governor could, but the governor would probably take heat for doing that, or she would take heat for doing that. So I think it would cause some pause. And also remember, because of the way the entire bill is written, this particular person would still have to go through the confirmation process by the legislature. So just because the governor might still decide to put the person forward with all that information becoming public, it would be probably doubtful the person would be confirmed by the legislature.
Senator Schauer?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just to, you know, I'd also point out that what's good for the goose is good for the gander. The governor might select and something could happen. Who knows? It's good. I see the wisdom in having the Judicial Council. One of the reasons we listened to the objective feedback on this bill and said, yeah, you know, that's good. We need to go back to that, away from the previous version that we had, to allowing them to kind of be that final vetting authority. But like I said, good for the goose, good for the gander. It's entirely possible the Judicial Council could select and push forward and in the process find one of theirs didn't go well. So they might want to get rid of them too. So this could happen to anybody. But we agreed with the process of getting to the Judicial Council to do that screening before they go forward so that hopefully things are found. And, you know, if they will hopefully do the right thing, hope is not a plan. But that's often, you know, we have found throughout history that sometimes people have skeletons in their closet and they don't admit it, and it is found out. And then, you know, hopefully the right thing is done by the Judicial Council in the selection process or the governor, Madam Chair. So I think this gives us a modicum of that final cross-check before those names are given to the governor by having the Judicial Council do that screening in that vetting and say, you know, basically yes or no based on the data. So for what it's worth, thank you.
Excellent. Senator Keel, did you have one final?
I have two more questions on the language of the amendment itself.
Please.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The first is, it's not clear to me how many names come to the governor from this process. I looked at it, read it. My understanding of the use of the word additional through its consistent use for the governor sending two additional names to the Judicial Council sending not more than four additional persons. So my understanding, and I called Ledge Legal, was that four names would end up on the governor's desk. The flow chart says six names end up on the governor's desk. Can you help me understand how many names is the governor going to get?
Scott Ogun, Mr. Ogun, please state your name because there's a lot of men talking right now. Name and answer the question, please.
Senator Keel, I always appreciate your astute observations about things, and I believe you are correct. I believe we're in error that six names. I think now that I'm rereading this, I believe you are correct. It would be a total of four names. So I would defer to the language in the amendment rather than our flow chart and apologize for any unintended misrepresentations.
Okay.
Senator Keel?
Thank you. I appreciate that clarification. That's very helpful. The last question to the sponsor or staff, however you'd like, has to do with when this process ends. I did not see, as I read the amendment, that it ever has to end, that a legislature and a governor at hammer and tongs with each other. I know that hasn't happened since statehood, but you could imagine it's possible. Could end up in this cycle, I mean, I think forever. Can you help me with when the judgeship gets filled?
The sponsor would like to take that, Mr. Vice Chairman Schauer.
Senator Keel, same question I asked, believe it or not, of my staff as we were going through this process with the drafters, and thanks for the point out on that. We'll make sure the chart is correct. You know, hey, this is why it happens this way. We vet it, and we find errors, and we fix them. Big deal. But in this particular case, I asked the same question. I'm like, well, what if they just decided to just keep doing this? Is there an end? And we entertained adding that in here. And the thought process as staff talked to Ledge Legal and went back and forth is kind of like, well, that hasn't really happened. We don't think that it would. It might necessarily complicate some portion of the bill. Because I thought boundaries would be good on this one. I go, you know, you get two tries at it, and you got to pick somebody. There's also the other side of it, which is if it's not working out and there is the tension, do we force ourselves into a square corner, kind of like happened 2 years ago? So ultimately, the decision was made to just go ahead and leave it out, relying on the fact that probably nobody, whether it's a governor or the legislature, wants to be in an endless loop, or the Judicial Council, never picking a name. So I had the same concerns, but in the end, the way it was explained through our debate internally and with Ledge Legal was that it should be fine, because there's a lot of things where we have legislative intent that are just, that's what it is, and you just let it roll and you hope that everything works out. And again, like I said before, hope isn't a plan. And quite honestly, I would entertain an amendment to this amendment if somebody wanted to add in some kind of a sidebar. I'm not against it. We just ultimately, through our discussions, decided that hasn't happened, and we probably won't see a, you know, there's no good reason to think there would be an endless loop of battles like this. It serves nobody's purpose. So long answer, Madam Chair, but I think that's answering his question, because honestly, I had the same one. Does that satisfy Senator Keel and other thoughts or questions with him?
Madam Chair, if I may, I really appreciate the back and forth and the leeway. I'm inclined to agree that the governor and the Judicial Council are not likely to end up in an endless loop, because the governor gets his people from the Judicial Council back. Qualified, unqualified, geniuses, drooling idiots, that he's going to get the chance to put them on the bench. Where we have the potential, though, is with the legislative confirmation step. And there you really have the opportunity to leave a judgeship or a set of judgeships unfilled for years. And that concerns me very much. So thank you.
Madam Chair.
Senator Myers, please.
To that point, I think that we've got probably two processes already to compare this to. One is the selection of judges at the federal level. And while we do see occasionally a Supreme Court justice lose a confirmation vote in the Senate, I don't think I've ever seen two in a row for the same seat lose. At the same time, within this state, we do have plenty of other positions outside of the judiciary that have to go through legislative confirmation as well. And occasionally people do fail on a confirmation vote, and that's the point of the process. But again, I'm not sure that I've ever seen any particular position. I could be wrong, but to my memory, we don't have any position that I'm aware of that has ever seen somebody fail, or two different people fail for the same position twice in a row. So it does seem to me we would, if one failed, that we would come to a solution relatively quickly.
Okay, so I'd like to just make a real quick comment in regards to that, and then Senator Shields, I'll get to you. But right now, there is a current event right now, as we all know, going on with selection of judges, and the people that have a problem with that. And also, we also have a legislative confirmation court case that just happened, and I actually wouldn't mind bringing somebody, you know, forth to discuss what happened in regards to that legislative council lawsuit. So I'm just, that's a potential down the road in the pretty near future. But go ahead, Senator Hughes, I think you had a comment.
Yeah, I was just going to thank you, play out the scenario that you're discussing here and thinking if it looked like there was going to be a failed vote, confirmation vote by the legislature, and we were coming up toward the end of our session, I would think that the governor would probably be ready to go to get another name right out there, so you wouldn't have a whole year's wait. And hopefully, what you said, probably not two in a row. If the next person selected didn't have the flaw that the legislature was seeing about the previous. So I think it would not be an endless loop, and I think that we wouldn't have, you know, vacancies continuing open for terribly long.
Thank you, Senator Hughes. And I would like to remind you that the sponsor, not only of the bill, but of the amendment, did leave a door open if you would like to put a friendly conceptual amendment on here, if that's your wish.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. I guess the difficulty with playing out the possible scenarios, one of them is the 90-day window instead of 45. That makes it tough to turn something around late in the session. But the other is that I think, you know, there have been references today in our discussion to the goings-on at the federal level where we have seen judgeships held open, confirmation simply not taken up, sometimes for short periods and sometimes for very extended periods. So it remains a concern. Thank you.
Mr. Scott Ogun, would you like to respond?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just got off the phone with Ledge Legal, and one of the things, we had some testimony earlier about how if language is ambiguous, judges look at the legislative record to see what the intent was. And the Ledge Legal said that indeed, his view of it, the way the amendment is written, that six names would indeed be submitted. So don't know if we need to clarify that language a little bit. Certainly should put it on record that that's the way Ledge Legal says it came out, and that's really what we intended. That's why I drafted the flowchart the way we did, and I have to correct myself, but on double-checking and rereading and rereading again, it is indeed six names that would be submitted, two names of the governor and up to four names that Judicial Council submits.
Senator Hughes?
Well, and it's along that was actually going to be my next question, because we have the phrase up to four. So the Judicial Council wouldn't have to hit the four. They could submit two or three. So I think the graphic, if it said four to six, perhaps would be correct. And maybe we need to bring Ledge Legal on to ask that question. But when it says up to four additional persons, I would think that doesn't require four.
Okay. We're going to take a brief at ease and try to get Ledge Legal on. Okay, we are back. Sorry about that. There was a little bit of technical difficulties getting Ledge Legal on the line. So I'm going to try to figure out. Sandin Fisher, I don't know if you know the question. Do you need the question to be repeated?
Madam Chair, for the record, Sandin Fisher, and yes, please, I would like to hear the question.
Who had the question?
Thank you.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess the question is if the governor, we get to this process, this is amendment number 4, so it's A.8. If we get to the point where the governor is sending names to the Judicial Council, it's pretty clear he can send them to. How many then do they send to him? He has sent them two. It says additional names. They may send him 4. It says additional names. Is that 4 in addition to his two that he must send 6, or is that 4 in addition to the ones they first sent him? So they sent him 4.
Senator Keel, through the chair, the way I understand that language is, and this is in subsection B of 2207070 on page 2 of A.8, and then it's again repeated in 2215170, so that this amendment covers Court of Appeals, District Court, and Magistrate judicial positions. And to your question, the governor submits two names, and then the Judicial Council reviews the two names by the governor, provides recommendations to the governor concerning the qualifications of those persons, and then submits the names of up to 4 additional persons to the governor. So there would be up to 6 names submitted by the Judicial Council, reviews on the 2 persons submitted by the governor, and then up to 4 nominations by the Judicial Council.
Senator Schauer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Sandin, just to be clear, for clarifying language, part of the discussion that Senator Keel had brought up before or as a question was we had made a flow chart, which I believe we may have to correct a little bit so it doesn't conflict with the actual amendment, which would then be in the bill if it passes, is we said 6 screen names referred to the governor for final selection. But in reality, that could be up to 6 names because the governor, as I read this, does not have to give 2. It says no more than 2. And for the Judicial Council, it says up to 4. So they could, for example, the governor could give 1, the Judicial Council could do 2. And it just, I want to get that clarifying language on the record so that there is no more confusion about it.
Senator Schauer, again, Sandin Fisher, Ledge Legal, for the record. And through the chair, Senator Schauer, that's correct. It would be up to 6 persons submitted for each vacant judicial position, up to 2 from the governor and reviewed by the Judicial Council, and then up to 4 additional nominated by the Judicial Council. That's correct.
Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Another question to Mr. Fisher. The language in sub A for both 2207070 and 2215170, section A reads slightly differently, where the word additional is used in both cases. That's what's holding me up. Am I misreading those subsections, and why is the word additional present there and not present in subsection B?
Senator DeKeel, through the chair, again, Sandin Fisher with Ledge Legal. The word additional in subsection A refers to if the governor decides to require a second round of nominations, and that language reads, if the governor the governor can submit 2 additional names if the governor determines not to appoint any of the people that have gone through the first round of screening by the Judicial Council.
Senator Keel?
Oh, I've gotten stuck because that is exactly the process described in B, so I've missed something material, Madam Chair.
Okay. Is there any other questions for Ledge Legal? Thank you, by the way, for coming on. Sorry that you didn't have the number to call in. So any other questions at this point in time? Senator Hughes.
Okay, I did work with the sponsor staff on this, but now I have a question because I'm looking on page 1 and line 13, the governor shall submit if he doesn't pick from the first round. And I'm just wondering if that's what the sponsor wanted? Do we want to require the governor to enter into the process, or could the governor just ask for more names from the Judicial Council? I don't know that I have a particular feeling about one way or the other, but this is requiring the governor then to participate.
Madam Chair, could we just get a clarification from Sandin on that first before we make a change we may not need to make? Because sometimes with the drafting requirements, it's written in a way that we normal mortals would not understand.
Sandin, and again, if you could put your name on the record, just because there's like five different men speaking, that would be great.
Of course, Madam Chair. For the record, Sandin Fisher with Legal Services, and Senator Hughes through the chair. That would be a policy decision to decide whether the governor is required to submit names to the Judicial Council under the selection process under this amendment. But under this amendment, the governor shall submit the names of not more than two additional persons if the governor decides at the first round of nominations, which the governor also submits names of up to two persons, to the Judicial Council. So that is correct. The governor is required to submit the names of not more than two persons if the governor decides not to appoint anyone under the first round.
And I guess I'd like to know from the bill sponsor whether he, as far as a policy call, do you want the governor to be required, or would it be an option for the governor to submit two names?
Thank you. Thanks, Madam Chair. I know we're discussing this a little more freely. To Senator Hughes, I am fine with the change from shall to may. I can't imagine scenarios, as Senator Keel and I were discussing before, that a governor would not submit names of his own choosing or her own choosing. So while I believe that's probably not something we would likely see, I certainly don't want to put handcuffs on it that would limit or force an action that the governor did or did not want to take. So I would be open to may versus shall in that particular case. I hadn't really thought about that, to be honest with you, and I just want to make sure, Sandin, you don't need to come back online, but if we say something here that's going to affect the bill downstream, that's one of my concerns, is if we change shall to may, are we affecting any other parts of the bill? Does it affect what might happen in a second round? So that's what I want to be very careful about here. I'm absolutely open to it, Madam Chair. I have been the whole time on processes, so I could go either way, I guess.
Thank you. I'm definitely relaxing some of the discussion right now, but if you could just tell us the exact line and the exact, because there's a couple mays and shells in here. So just if someone could just point out exactly which one you're talking about.
Madam Chair.
Senator Hughes.
Yeah, and Sandin may be able to tell us other places, but the place that caught my eye was page 1, line 13, the word shall. But I'm starting to debate with myself now, because I think I might be leaning towards shall, and here's why. Because someone who represents the people in a more direct way is now putting forward names. And I like that being in the mix. So I'm actually okay with leaving it as shall.
Okay, and thank you for clearing that, because in line 15 there's a may, and that's why it's so important, you know, to point out exactly the line and the one that we're referring to. Senator Keel, welcome to the
thank you, Madam
the
Chair.
Continued debate.
I just want to make sure Senator Hughes is getting what she wants. the question I would pose is, zero is not more than two. So if Senator wants to make sure that a governor submits names, do we need to say at least one and not more than two?
Madam Chair, could we defer to Sandin? Because I want to make sure we're not messing something up in the entire amendment.
You can steer a little, so go for it. I want some leeway, so go ahead.
Sandin, Senator Schauer again. I know you're listening to the conversation now between what Senator Hughes had from May to Shall, or from shall to may back to potentially shall, and Senator Keel's question about whether or not, the sum of zero being zero, should we say one, at least one, but not more than two. And so can you just comment on those kind of these two sidebars and whether or not and how they might affect the bill so that we get this in total? Because what I don't want to do is make a amendment to an amendment and find out we've shot the thing full of holes that we didn't anticipate because we're doing this on the fly. Please. Thank you.
For the record, Sandin Fisher with Legal Services. through the chair, Senator Schauer. I'm trying to think of this as we're talking and in any potential ramifications. Like you say, zero is less than two. So in theory, if the governor decided not to appoint any persons under the first round and instigated a second round, then the governor would be required under this amendment to submit the names of not more than two persons, and that could be zero, to the Judicial Council, and then the Judicial Council may submit to the governor the names of not more than four persons. This is triggering the second round of applicants for judicial review. The Judicial Council is not required to submit any nominations if the Judicial Council does not want to. And if the committee's will is to require one or the other, that's something that I would be happy to help with the drafting of. And I think that's primarily a policy decision. From a drafting perspective, and you know, to make sure the system works, I would comment that we would want to make sure that this, if the governor decides not to appoint anyone under the first round of review, that the second round of review, how that's triggered, remains intact, and that there's an obligation for somebody to appoint or nominate additional persons after the first round of review, and that would be a policy determination by the committee.
Madam Chair, thank you. Thanks, Shannon, for that answer. We're having a really good discussion here, and it's kind of fascinating because I think these are things maybe haven't been discussed in public record maybe ever. Because it brings up the question of if nobody submitted a name and the governor didn't fill it, would he be in trouble? Because we've seen that with the governor, part of the recall thing was about him not filling a seat. So, how would that play out? I'm just thinking through the various options here. So I got to go back to the discussion previously with Senator Keel, though. These things, we're kind of arguing on some things that are the theoretical that are, I don't believe have ever really happened, and I'm not sure would happen. I can't see how the Judicial Council would not fulfill its duty. And quite honestly, I have a hard time believing a governor would not fulfill their, you know, a duty as well to provide names to fill the bench. So that seems like a highly unlikely option. The only one that seems more likely is somehow names are shot down and we circle back to start with some fresh names. But we've given ourselves the options to do that here. So I am inclined, Madam Chair, as the sponsor of the bill and this amendment, to leave it as it is based on all of the evidence, but I appreciate the discussion because it's really made us think about a couple of contingencies here that I had not even considered. So I'm kind of going back to this, Madam Chair. I'd prefer just leave it unless the will of the committee is to maybe change a word or two, as long as we know it's solid.
Senator Hughes?
Yeah, and I have a question for Sandin then, because to Senator Keel's point, not more than two could be zero. So we use that same phrase for the Judicial Council, not more than four. Are we also saying the Judicial Council could submit zero? Do we need to be putting minimums in?
For the record, Sandin Fisher with Ledge Legal, through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's correct. Not more than two would be zero, and the Judicial Council's authority to nominate four additional is optional throughout the amendment. So in that scenario, there could be zero new persons nominated in the second round. That's correct.
And follow up, Madam Chair?
Senator Heath.
So that means that the governor would be forced to go back to the first round. So I think that the sponsor might want to consider having a minimum. I mean, like, we don't think this could happen, but I mean, it could if the Judicial Council is insistent that someone from the first round be picked. They could just refuse to submit any, because that not more than four could mean they would submit zero the second round. Mr. Sponsor,
can I interrupt just for a second? Sandin, if we were to go on the recommendation of what Senator Keel brought up, which it's been bantered, how would you propose the language to be written? If we could do a conceptual today, how would you propose the language be written?
Madam Chair, again, Sandin Fisher with Legal Services. off the top of my head, I think, and again, this is a policy call and depends on the will of the committee, but if I'm understanding what the committee is considering correctly, the some language similar to at least one but not more than two, or at least one but not more than four, something along those lines may capture the committee's intent.
Okay, so I'm gonna refer to Senator Schauer, and then please feel free to banter with Senator Keel, because he kind of had language, and then I really want to get this resolved to the best of our ability. This technical work is some of the most important work that we do, and so please, whoever one of you gentlemen want to weigh in first.
I want to bring up one thing, Madam Chair, just briefly, and then defer to Senator Keel's time. You know, you could have an example as we're going through this. For example, I said for example twice, three times. If you had the Judicial Council in discussions with the governor and they saw what his two names were, they might like the names, and they might provide none because they believe that they're good names and good candidates, and they might just go forward and get vetted and approved, and so be it. I suppose you could have that in reverse. You could have the governor look at the names of the Judicial Council and think they're just fine based on whatever reasoning and submit no names themselves, as opposed to being forced to submit a name. So I'm just trying to play a little bit of both sides of the fence here, how this may work out. We may require one body to submit names when they don't need to or feel that they need to, so we might be handcuffing them even further by doing this, as opposed to allowing the process to play out and allow all of them to do none or do up to whatever the maximum is, so they have a choice in the process. Because again, I go back to it, I understand what Senator Hughes is saying, and I'm not arguing that that may not be true. But I think you could find some scenarios where we might be forcing them to when they really don't want to, or they have an agreement or something works out. And so I think you could argue that both ways. I'm not opposed to doing this necessarily, but we might be forcing somebody's hand when there's general agreement and unnecessarily clouding up the process as written.
Excellent. I'm going to again loosen the formalities and let you guys kind of work it out and call on Sandin Fisher if you wish. Senator Keel, did you want to comment?
Madam Chair, no. Mr. Fisher's language, I think, would do the job. I just wanted to make sure that Senator Hughes had the opportunity to contemplate exactly how she wanted to structure that if that change gets made.
And I would like to banter it a bit with the sponsor, because if the governor is not pleased with any of the names in the first round, and he or she submits up to two names, and maybe some information is exposed about the two names that he or she submitted, and they're not qualified then in the governor's mind, and the Judicial Council wants to force him back to that first list, then that puts the governor in a bind. And I'm not, in my conversations in regard to your general intent of this bill, is not to repeat situations in the past where the Judicial Council is really limiting the governor's selection to candidates the governor does not want at all. So I'm almost thinking we could, if we don't, if we leave the governor shall submit the names of not more than two, then that gives the governor so the ability not to submit in any, so we're not forcing, but it allows them to submit to. But I am thinking that the Judicial Council, we might want to put a minimum so that the governor doesn't get forced by the Judicial Council to select from a list of which he or she does not see someone they really want to appoint. Does that make sense? So to leave the governor's the language as is regarding the governor, but for the Judicial Council, put a minimum, and I don't know if you want that minimum to be two or three, at least two, not more than four, or at least three, not more than four. I would think you'd want more than one, because then you're really giving the governor a short list.
I think when the intent, and some of the retired judges from the state of Alaska that we've discussed with, and some other legal minds, interestingly, nobody wants to testify before the committee because they're afraid of how it might impact them. I find that fascinating. One of the intents was to give more choices so that we don't get limited to one or two and end up in this kind of stalled process, and or limit the ability to look at a wider pool. So in the spirit of that, it would probably make sense, and I am thinking my way through this, to put down a minimum of, say, two. So we would have a larger pool for the governor to choose from. I can't imagine if the governor wants to have a larger pool, he's going to select one or zero. It just doesn't make sense to me. He's going to want to, she, he, whoever, the governor, is going to want to put their names out. Why wouldn't they? To give them more choices. So I hear what you're saying. I can't imagine that either body would limit their choices. I guess there's scenarios where that may happen if they agreed or other things were worked out, but because I'm sure they would communicate. But I'm okay with maybe putting a min of two. I still think that I hate to say shall four, but the intent, I go back to this, was to expand the pool, was to give more choices, was to get more people into the pipeline, and not have this narrow, tiny, you know, couple choices, and that's all you get. So I would rather lean towards more than less if the will of the committee was in that direction for something.
And I'm going to interject because we are very loose on the formalities right now, but I'm going to call outside the line just a little bit on amendment number three, which I know was withdrawn. There's some good language that we may want to consider, you know, in that within 30 days submit the names and forward the names rather than leaving it so loosey-goosey. This kind of is more of a directive, but you guys, I really am not sure if that's the right option or not, but it's more of a directive in amendment number three that I know is withdrawn, but I thought the language was pretty good.
And I'll speak to that. I think there's discussion of a possible bill that would speak to that, and that's one reason why I didn't bring it back onto the table. But back to amendment number four, I would like to know if the sponsor would entertain a friendly conceptual amendment, and it would have to be woven in other places where necessary, because I'm only looking at page one, and that on line 15, the word may would be changed to shall, and then on line 16, we would insert at the beginning of the line at least two and
not more than four.
Right.
Madam Chair.
Oh, go ahead.
Sandin, based on that comment from Senator Hughes, do you see any downstream in the rest of the last three pages where that would affect it, or we would need to make language changing changes or clarifying language as well if we were to do that?
For the record, Sandin Fisher with Legal Services, through the chair, Senator Schauer. That language would require the Judicial Council to submit two to four names to the governor for appointment. If the governor decided not to make an appointment under the first round, this language would not require the Judicial Council to submit two to four names in the first round of judicial selection and qualification consideration, and that's a policy call, but that's something I wanted to point out to the committee. But other than that, I believe it's a policy call, Senator.
Can I ask a question about that?
Go ahead.
Sandin, maybe I got confused. By changing may to shall on line 15 and inserting at least two and at the beginning of line 16, you're saying in the first round they wouldn't have to submit any names? Because I'm trying to make sure in the second round they have to at least submit two.
Again, for the record, Sandin Fisher with Legal Services, through the chair, Senator Hughes, that's correct. The language of replacing the may with shall and adding at least two on page one, line 15, and in the corresponding section for AS 2215, that would require the Judicial Council to submit additional to require the Judicial Council to submit names in the second round, but that would not place a requirement on the Judicial Council to submit names in the first round of judicial selection.
Well, it seems to me that we're concerned, the concern here is that in the second round the Judicial Council would basically balk and say either pick somebody from our first list or we don't give you any other option. That same problem doesn't exist in the first round, because if the Judicial Council just balks and doesn't put any names out, then it has no control over it. So it seems to me that just the incentives listed in there, they would put somebody forward in the first round, so I wouldn't worry about amending the first section of the process, only the second.
And I guess I want to go ahead and just comment. I want to ask Sandin in regards to this. So on page 1, line 9, I'm not sure if we eliminate those brackets that deleting would help, or in regards to if the governor does not appoint, I mean, don't even give him that option on line 11 and 12. So I don't know if that will help fix it or not, but if you could assess that would be helpful. And then after he answers, Senator, you should go for it.
Madam Chair, Sandin Fisher with Legal Services, for the record. If the committee decides to take away the language about if the governor does not appoint someone from the first round, that's a policy call, and the committee could change that if that's its will. I think taking away that language would potentially change to make there only one round of nominations if we take away the governor's authority to decide not to submit someone or not to appoint someone from the first round. Taking away the brackets from page 1, line 9 of the amendment would reinsert two or more persons nominated by the Judicial Council. I think it would likely be it would be clearer to place the number of persons submitted by the Judicial Council in the second round in line 15 and 16 of page 1, because that's where this amendment gives instruction to the Judicial Council about submitting additional names in the second round of selection and qualification review.
Okay, excellent. So it looks like we have two issues here, and that's exactly what Senator Hughes had already done in regards to line 15 and 16. So, Senator Hughes.
And then my comment was just going to be I was going to agree with Senator Myers as far as I don't think we'd have a problem with the first round, because the Judicial Council is going to want to put forward their names of who they think would be best. So mm-hmm. It's only the second round that is my concern.
Okay, so we are on an amendment, and it's a conceptual amendment. So I'm going to have Senator Hughes, before we vote on this conceptual amendment, just to make sure that everybody is clear. There looks like to be no more questions. We got about 12 more minutes. So with that, Senator Hughes.
Madam Chair, I moved a friendly conceptual amendment to amendment number 4, and that would I'll read the actual words there on lines 15, but the idea is that for the second round, it would require the Judicial Council to submit at least 2 names. So on line 15, the word may would change to shall, and then inserted after, it would say shall submit to the governor the names of at least 2 and not more than 4 additional persons.
Okay, and with that, does anybody object? Oh, Senator Keel, go ahead.
Madam Chair.
Let me object just for personals of discussion. Okay, go ahead, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It just occurred to me, and I apologize that it didn't hit me earlier. What happens if we get into a second round? A governor sends 2 names to the council, and nobody else applies. I mean, if the rest of the attorneys in the state go, well, we know who the governor's going to pick. One of those 2 people. I'm out. I'm not going through this process.
Yeah, I understand that's rhetorical, but I really want to vote on this amendment.
But, I mean,
so I think we need to either. I mean, I've objected, but I want to speak specifically to this issue.
And the reason I asked specific to this amendment.
We were closing the loop because of your rabbit hole. You started us on
half
an hour ago.
I apologize, but by changing may to shall, they have to dig up 2 people somewhere, even if nobody applies. And
that's
I don't know
correct.
How they do that.
And may I comment?
Go for it. Yeah.
Well, you know, typically they have a pool, and they have put forward names from a group of applicants, so they can go back to that group of applicants, I would think. And I think that would solve that.
Yes, please go ahead. We're relaxing the rules.
If I may, on to the next point. We're going to have to either do a second conceptual amendment or do a conceptual amendment to the conceptual amendment. Yes, I know. Sorry. because again, we have been fixing one section here, and this has to do with vacancies. We're also going to have to fix the next section on page, I believe it's on page 3, that is applying in case through retirement or death, in case a judge has been removed due to retention election. So we're going to have to amend that one as well.
Okay.
And now you all hit me. I understand.
Okay, no problem. But let's deal with this right here. You know, in regards to vacancies, and I've got the whole, all the statutes here. If anyone wants to make sure they see how it fits in.
I would like to know what Sandin thinks to make sure that we're not setting ourselves up for a legal challenge based on his question, because if it does put us into something weird, we have our legal mind that will hopefully could answer that.
Excellent. Okay, so Sandin, you're going to be back in the hot seat. So with this amendment, this conceptual amendment, it's a friendly one, on line 15, crossing the may to shall, and then on line 16, right before, not more, at least two, but not more than four. Can you just comment, please? Senator Schauer just wanted to make sure we weren't doing anything, you know, that we weren't intending to do.
Yes, Madam Chair. For the record, Sandin Fisher with Legal Services. And Madam Chair, with respect to the amendment, I would just ask that the amendment contain the ability for Ledge Legal to make additional conforming changes necessary to make the amendment, you know, all work together. Again, this amendment is requiring the Judicial Council to submit at least two persons under subsection B, and right now subsection B says may submit up to four additional persons. The leeway to be able to make that language work together to enact the will of the committee would be important. Additionally, under 2215-170, that section applies to district court and magistrate judges. And a similar amendment would need to be made in that section and potentially two sections on page 3, because that section has identical language that requires the governor to submit not more than two additional names and the Judicial Council to submit not more than four additional names if the governor rejects all the candidates from the first round. So these two similar statutes deal with different courts, and those amendments would need to be made to each of those sections. And then with respect to the comment about dealing with if judges are removed for different reasons, under subsection B of 2207070 and the corresponding section in 2215, a vacancy, it reads, upon the occurrence of an actual vacancy, the certification of rejection following election, the election following failure of a judge to file a declaration of candidacy, or the decision of the governor not to appoint under four, those all occur, start this 90-day window for the governor to make submit nominations to the Judicial Council, and then another 90-day window for the Judicial Council to review the name submitted by the governor and submit up to four additional names. The language at the bottom of Section B would permit the Judicial Council and the governor to, and let me say, I want to make sure that I'm reading the language correctly. In the event of an impending vacancy, and this is line 13 on page 3, the end of line 13, in the event of an impending vacancy, other than by reason of rejection or failure to file a declaration, the governor may submit the names and the Judicial Council may go through its process in the 90 days preceding the vacancy. So if there's a vacancy that we know of and we know the date, this gives the governor and the Judicial Council the ability to act earlier if all parties complete their requirements as far as submitting names, reviewing names, and then sending them back to the governor. So this allows appointments to happen, the process to happen quicker if all of the parties work in that time frame. But the first additional language in subsection B, the actual vacancy, certification of rejection, failure to file a declaration of candidacy or four, those would occur starting the 90-day trigger at the latest following the actual vacancy of the judicial office to make this process begin for filling the vacancy.
Thank you, Shannon. That actually helped me a lot, and it actually was so much clearer when I actually had the statute, you know, before me. So I think we need to go ahead and vote on this conceptual amendment with the conforming. So, Senator Hughes, if you don't mind stating
yeah,
it one
I'll
more time.
Restate it with, you know, the intention that this be woven in with conforming changes. So I move a friendly conceptual amendment to amendment number 4. On page 1, changing the word on line 15, may to shall, and inserting after the end of line 15, at least two but, I'm not sure if it should be but or and. I'll leave that up to the drafter, and then to make any conforming changes necessary throughout the amendment.
Okay, because it was already moved, I am removing my objection. It looks like that passed unanimously, so we're going to go ahead, and we need to go ahead and move on to Amendment 4 with final comments, if anyone has any final comments on Amendment 4 before we vote on it. Because I think I'm the one that put an objection for discussions in regards to this. Is there any other final thoughts, Mr. Vice Chairman?
I have
none. Okay, so with that, I'm going to remove my objection. I'm sorry, Senator Keel.
I will object.
Okay, so Senator Keel is going to object. So with that, we need a roll call vote. Nancy?
Senator Schauer?
Yes.
Senator Hughes?
Yes.
Senator Meyer?
Yes.
Senator Keel?
No.
Okay, so with that, Amendment number 4 passes. That brings us back to Amendment number 1. Senator Myers.
Madam Chair, after all the discussion that we had last Wednesday and the discussion we had today on the use of the word May, in the interest of not turning May into June and July, I will withdraw my amendment.
thank you, Senator Myers. So with that, we have the bill before us, but I am choosing at this time to not move the bill out again today because I really want to have a clear committee substitute. I want all of you guys to be able to process this. I'm going to request this today, get it to you guys as soon as possible, and then I'm also can now officially request new fiscal notes. So I want you all, as soon as we get the information, we will get it on to you, Senator Hughes.
Yeah, thank you. And I would request of the sponsor that the graphics be updated to reflect what we learned today and that they also have titles on them with SB 14 and, you know, current process, SB 14 process or something like that so that they'll be handy tools. Thank you.
Okay, so you guys did excellent work today. It's the technical. It's actually some of my favorite work, so I really appreciated everybody's indulgence and great debate. And everybody from Senator Schauer's office and Ledge Legal and everybody that's been part of this, I really appreciate it. I will say that I am going to set the bill aside. We're going to be dealing with the new version with the updated amendments and there and the fiscal notes on Wednesday. However, I already have two things booked for Wednesday, so I'm not sure exactly what order the agenda is going to be in, but it will be that in addition to the history of pandemics, and that was David Barton, and then Phil Klein is going to highlight some really key court cases, featured court cases in regards to the constitutional rights of a lot of Americans. So that will be on Wednesday, February 24th. And with that, we are going to go ahead and adjourn about 5 seconds early. It's 2:59 and 59 seconds. We're adjourned.